All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And hello, America. How are you? My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type Army aviator, 1969 in the Republic of Vietnam. And welcome to Veterans Radio. We've got a great program. I'm going to start out first, though, with a shout out to the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310 and the VFW Post 423 here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. They just had their annual pig roast this afternoon. It ended at around 4 o'clock local time, and I want to tell them thank you for putting this on each year. It's a great fundraiser. I think this year's crowd was bigger than ever, and it was a great experience, I hope, for all of the people out there. And speaking of Vietnam veterans, how's that for a segue? There is a program coming up on Thursday, October 8th, at the Michigan Capitol Building in Lansing, Michigan, at 12 noon. Thursday, October 8th, the state of Michigan is welcoming and wants to say welcome home and thank you to all the Michigan Vietnam era veterans. And this is going to be on the lawn of the Michigan State Capitol. They would like you, if you are a Vietnam veteran or a family of a Vietnam veteran, you are invited to attend as well. And they would like you to contact them, so I guess they can figure what food, security, you know how Vietnam veterans are, right, guys? Anyway, so they want you to RSVP online at MichiganSaysThanks.com. That's MichiganSaysThanks.com. And I hope to see you there. That's the welcome and thank you to Michigan Vietnam era veterans Thursday, October 9th, 2015 at 12 noon. There are a lot of other events going on around the local Ann Arbor area, and we want to make sure that you let us know what's happening, because we think we can help each other out by promoting these different events. In fact, there's a job fair coming up, actually this coming Tuesday, and it's through Kroger, and many of you who do your shopping at Kroger, which is our largest supermarket chain in Michigan, has an Honoring Our Heroes hiring event at all the Kroger stores, looks like, on Tuesday, September 15th. They ask that you apply online at jobs.kroger.com and make sure that you search for the hashtag Honoring Our Veterans to find Honoring Our Heroes event. And that way, if you complete your application by later tonight, it looks like, I'm sorry for the short notice, but they will be scheduling interviews, and you can go and be interviewed at Kroger, and it looks like it's for all kinds of different work. It's proud to hire, they say they're proud to hire active military service members, veterans, and their families. So maybe you get a little step up there, but it says to come back to the store on September 15th to talk with their team. This runs from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. No appointment necessary, but evidently you need to get all that information filled out on Kroger. So make sure you go to Kroger's website, jobs@kroger.com, fill that out. Might help out a few people. At the pig roast this afternoon, I ran into a good friend of ours, and CJ said that they've got their first golf outing, and it's an organization called Conduct Becoming. And this is a new nonprofit in the area, and they collect stories for veterans, much like Veterans Radio does, much like a lot of people do out there. And he takes incredible photographs of veterans while they are telling their stories. And this is something I might, you might want to find out more about as you go along. But the organization is called ConductBecomingFoundation.org, and they're having their first annual golf outing. And this is coming up on Saturday, October 3rd at 12 o'clock. And this is at the Fox Hill Golf Course in Plymouth, Michigan. And for more information, you can go to conductbecomingfoundation.org, or you can email cj@conductbecomingfoundation.org and find out more about the organization and their golf outing. And you can please, it says please, follow them on Facebook and Twitter. So go to Conduct Becoming Foundation and find out more information. Wow. That's kind of cool. I like that one. You know, you can follow Veterans Radio also on Facebook and Twitter, and we've got a lot of different things that are posted up there on our Facebook account about upcoming events. And, in fact, there are a couple of them that are coming up. And as soon as I can find them here on my computer, I will talk to you about it. One is there's a Veterans Summit coming up in October, and this is going to be at Schoolcraft College. And this is put on by the, there it is, Veterans Summit. All right. Veterans Summit, 6th annual Veterans Summit, is going to be Saturday, October 3rd at 2 this year, and it's at Schoolcraft College, as I mentioned, at the Vista Tech Center on Hagerty Road in Livonia, and it runs from 8:30 till 2:30 on Saturday, October 3rd. There'll be representatives there from the Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America, Disabled American Veterans, Michigan Fitness Foundation, Team Red, White, and Blue, Quicken Loans, VA Hospital Volunteers. Topics covered include health care benefits, service-connected disability, advancement for civilian job force, community opportunity, all kinds of things, one-on-one time with veteran service officers, and much, much more. This is free for veterans of all ages and their families. One of the sponsors, of course, is our partner Jim Falsone with Legal Help for Veterans. So check this all out. It's the Canton Community Foundation presents the 6th Annual Veterans Summit on Saturday, October 3rd, 2015. You can find more information out about this. Go to Canton Community Foundation, or you can find it on a Veterans Radio Facebook page. And that's it for the news for today. We've got a couple of great program guests today. One is a pre-recorded interview that we do with an organization called VeteransTicketsFoundation.org, and we're going to be coming back to that one right after the break. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking about the Merchant Marines and how come those guys don't get the benefits that everybody else who fought in World War II is. So you got to stay tuned to listen to that. We'll be right back after this real quick message. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Hello, I'm Chris Christopherson. On November 8, 1965, the 173rd Airborne Brigade on Operation Hump, War Zone D in Vietnam, were ambushed by over 1,200 VC.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought we were going to go right in the music by Big and Rich, but I forgot about the prologue. So, anyway, coming right now, we're going to be listening to an interview that our partner Jim Falsone did with Al Magg, who happens to be the CMO, or Chief Marketing Officer, for Veterans Ticket Foundation. And for more information about this organization, you're going to like this story. It's go to vettix.org. That's VITTIX.org. So we're going to go right to that interview.
We're really proud on Veterans Radio today to have as our guest Al Magg with Veteran Tickets Foundation. Al, say hello to the Veterans Radio listening audience.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be on.
Well, Al, we're really happy to be able to introduce your organization, where you're the Chief Marketing Officer, to our Veterans Radio listeners. Tell us a little bit about what Veteran Tickets Foundation is all about.
VetTix, and that'll be the nickname here. VetTix has been around for about 5 years, and we offer two programs, Tickets for Troops and Heroes Wish. So let me just stick to the tickets for now. Basically, we get tickets from anybody you can imagine that sells them. It can be everybody from the NFL to NASCAR to your local comedy clubs to the circus to Disneyland. It doesn't matter. If there are tickets being sold, and there's millions every day going out, and we unfortunately know there's approximately a million plus that are not used by people every day, and which is very sad, and we are trying to make that go away. We would like to get tickets from people. Again, they can be from teams, professional teams, colleges, and so on, to donate tickets to us, and we get them in the hands of our military veterans and their immediate family of troops killed in action, and they are either current serving or vets. From any era, doesn't matter. And currently, we have, in fact, this week, we're probably going to hit a milestone of 1.5 million tickets served, which is we're pretty excited about, because just a year ago at this time, we had served a million. So we've grown 500,000 pretty quickly, and so we're very proud of the growth we've had serving our veterans in all 50 states and D.C.,
Well, Al, let me back up because I think I want to slow it down and focus in. VetTix, which is VETTIX.org, if you're looking for it on the internet, VetTix took this unique situation of empty seats in events and arenas and said, boy, how do we get those to veterans? How did the founders stumble on this concept?
About 5-6 years ago at a Super Bowl here in Arizona, the CEO of our group, Mike Forcaretto, was at an event at that Super Bowl, and he knew one of the guys in the color guard. And when the color guard was finished, unfortunately, which I think is really poor form on the NFL's part, the color guard had to leave. They don't stay to watch the game.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Of course it is. And Mike and his partner at the game had a couple seats next to him the whole game that were empty. And they're going, why? Jeez, I mean, somebody from the color guard could have sat here. And so it continued from there, and he started a program based on a college program he was working on. And he just said, he is a Navy vet, by the way, and he just felt pretty damn strong about the fact that, wow, wouldn't it be great to help veterans, as we know, aren't paid that well, or our military is not paid that well, and it would be just a nice thing to do to help people go to events they can't normally afford. And he's turned it into a few thousand tickets when they first started out to, as I said, 1.5 million tickets being served to people. So I couldn't be prouder to know him. In fact, Mike was recently named to the Hill Vets 100, one of the top military known people in the United States today. And I think it's well deserved.
Al, how do you come to this particular mission?
Well, I ran into one of the co-founders of VetTix at a marketing meeting where other marketers came together here in Phoenix. And we got to know each other fairly well, nice gentleman. And his name is Eddie Rausch. And as we were getting to know each other, he was explaining to me the fledgling program that they had. And I was the chief communications officer of a $26 billion company. And when you have that many zeros in your number of a company, you usually have tickets. And we had suite tickets for all the sporting events here in Arizona and concerts and so on. And typical of many companies, they don't use all the tickets. So what Eddie was suggesting to me was, sure, I'll get you a few tickets. And then I probably let that go. And the young lady working for me came up to me one day and says, Al, I got to tell you that VetTix group is the only group that says thank you. And I said, well, give them more tickets. So as time went on, we just started realizing how effective they were and how good we felt giving away tickets to folks who normally couldn't go to these events. And it worked out really well. Eventually, they knew I was retiring from this big corporation, and they were nice enough. They made a big mistake asking me, but whatever. They'll figure it out eventually. But at this point in time, I was honored that they asked what I considered doing this. And to be honest with you, it turned out to be a really good thing because I was headed in the direction once I was going to retire to start up a PR business just for nonprofits. And they became the foundation of what I wanted to accomplish. And so they are my a wonderful program to work with. I'm honored they want me to be their CMO. And it's an easy job because you tell people about your story, and this story is a good one. People do listen, they smile, and this is a good story. You know, there's so much happening in the world today. Our military vets do struggle with the VA, and there's all kinds of stories going out here and there that aren't always positive. Well, I think we got a positive story here for once. And
well, you're absolutely right, Al, and we at Veterans Radio try to highlight those kind of good stories, which is really what brought us to, boy, we got to tell our folks about VetTix. Interesting, would you talk a little bit more, Al, about it, because this might be something that most active duty folks and those who just retired or those just getting out of service we don't have the keys to those big C-suites where businesses operate and suites in stadiums. Talk to us a little bit about that the recognition that there are businesses who don't use all their tickets.
It usually starts with the sales department at these different companies, and then they end up sitting in somebody's desk drawer, and they start scrambling with a couple days to go, who's going to use the tickets, and then they offer them to the employees and so on. And too often these tickets get unused. But let's not just blame the companies out there. We all have been involved in a situation where you had tickets to a game or to a concert, and guess what? Something happened, and you just can't go at the last minute. And so instead of giving your tickets to your mother-in-law, here's a chance to give them to somebody probably more deserving in many cases. And I can tell you, I donate tickets. I live in Phoenix. That's where we're headquartered with the Vetix gang. But I still have my season tickets to the Cubs and the Bears in Chicago, where I grew up. And trust me, I don't always get rid of those tickets, so what I do is easily give them to my friends at Vetix, and we get them out to people. So people will approach us, some of the promoters, some of the entertainers. With John Mellencamp, we had a deal with told us that that 100% of the people that were given tickets came to his events. We have Kenny Chesney always gives tickets to veterans, and so we help disperse them. Again, we get them from the different teams and so on. So our role is very simple. We get the tickets and get them out to people. Sometimes very quickly, Beyonce gave us 1,000 tickets with 24 hours notice and got them all served. So it's a real pleasure to do this for folks. And when I talk about our tickets, we have 260,000 verified members. And all you got to do is go on vetix.org, sign up. It's verified by a third-party organization. And we are, again, are looking for more people. I believe, I know you're out of Michigan, and I believe we have about 5,000 people out of Michigan right now.
And when you verify somebody as a Vetix member, who are the types of families or members of families that can take advantage of this this offering?
Well, in most cases, tickets are given out a maximum four. So here's a person can take three friends or four, three more family members. That's usually the case. But sometimes we do hand out a few more tickets.
And this is available to currently serving active duty military members?
Absolutely.
And also immediate family members of troops that have been killed in action?
So at this point in time, four tickets are served to most of our folks who do ask for tickets. I think there are sometimes they can get a couple more. But in most cases, they're always honorably discharged veterans can ask for these. Immediate family of those killed in action, and currently serving military, all eras of being veterans.
That's great. Al, in terms of, we're talking to Al Maggs, who is the Chief Marketing Officer for Vetix here on Veterans Radio. When you do this and you get tickets to somebody, is there an impact for the rest of the community by these folks going to these events that otherwise the seats would be empty?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's a win-win for an awful lot of people. We've done some studies, and we know that our Vetixers, when they go, they spend approximately $100 at the events, which includes parking, food and beverage. So that is something that not only fills a seat with someone smiling and having a good time and making that event look busy, but they're also taking care of getting some of the economy going. So it's all positive.
Well, that's really amazing. You hear that at times, but I guess you didn't think of, I didn't think about it. You're making free tickets available to them, maybe tickets for four people, and those tickets are pricey. But the reality of it is they're going to buy some food, they're going to buy some drinks, maybe they're going to buy a souvenir to remember the event by, and that all adds up as well.
Yeah, out of the tickets we served last year, which is approximately 430,000, that value, those tickets, talk about the economy, those tickets were valued at almost $16 million. So let me say it again, $16 million. And so if those 400,000 people plus went and they spent some money, how much was that impact? So the numbers add up very, very quickly, and we're very proud of that.
And do you get a lot of feedback from the veterans and military members who go to these events where you've provided them free tickets about how their experience was?
Well, if there's one absolutely wonderful thing about VetFix is if you go on their site every day on their Facebook, every time you go on our Facebook, which I believe we have about 114,000 likes right now, which is growing every day, on Twitter and so on, we have testimonials. We have over 65,000 testimonials from people that are, and usually they're wearing a VetFix t-shirt. They got a little sign saying, thank you, VetFix. And you can always tell where they're at. They're either in front of a hockey rink or they're at a concert. You can tell where they're at. They send in a little note. And I think that's, again, why I ever got involved with the folks with VetFix in the first place, was the young lady told me they were the only group that ever said thank you. And now that I've been the CMO for these folks for the last couple of years, oh, goodness, the testimonials, some will make you cry. They're so happy to be invited and to go. And I think what's really cool is it's creating memories. It is absolutely creating memories for people coming and going from their their trips abroad. It's their chance to reacquaint themselves with their family, get involved in the community. It's a wonderful opportunity to do all these type of things. And it's creating memories that we're very, very, very pleased to read about. And if you go again on vetfix.org, you can see these all the time.
You can listen to that complete interview on veteransradio.net website. That was Jim Falzone talking with Al Magg, who is the chief marketing officer for VetTix. So go to vettix.org, VETTIX.org, and either donate tickets or you can donate funds to help this organization. You can see the testimonials. It's a great organization. We're very pleased to be associated with them, and we'll probably have them on again in the future. Right now, I wanted to get in, but we got about 2 minutes before we go to a break at the bottom of the hour, and I wanted to bring our live guest on with me right now, and that is Brian Cronin. Brian, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Well, Brian happens to be the grandson of the author of the book that we're going to be talking about in the second half of the program, and that was Bernard F. Flynn, and he wrote a book entitled, I love this book, it's called Bargain Basement War Heroes, What Did You Do in World War II, Grandpa? How did you end up being the one that, I realize that he passed away, but how did you get involved in this whole thing in about a minute?
Well, I mean, I grew up, of all his 21 grandchildren, we grew up the closest to him. We were just down the block. We grew up our house. So I've known these stories for all my life, essentially.
Well, this is...
And we've been... Yeah.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, this is the story of the Merchant Marines, and we're not really that familiar with the Merchant Marines, at least most of us that were in the service. And so this is what we're going to be talking about when we come around the bottom of the hour. But so your grandfather was in the Merchant Marines. How did he get into the Merchant Marines?
He got into the Merchant Marines right when, after the Pearl Harbor, when everyone was looking to enlist, he first looked to enlist as a pilot in either the Navy or the Army, the Air Force. However, he had an overbite, which the old masks that they used to have wouldn't allow you to use. An overbite would disqualify you. So instead, he saw some brochures for the Merchant Marine, and that's what he decided to go do.
And briefly, what was the Merchant Marine's job? We got 30 seconds.
The Merchant Marine's job was to supply our troops in Europe and in the Pacific.
Okay, and we'll talk more about that when we come back at the bottom of the hour. We're going to be listening to the news, and then we'll be coming back and talking with Brian Cronin, the grandson of Bernard Flynn. The name of the book is Bargain Basement War Heroes, What Did You Do in World War II, Grandpa? You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be back shortly. We're back on Veterans Radio, listening to a little World War II music, because that's the theme of this half of the program. We're talking with Brian Cronin, whose grandfather wrote a book entitled Bargain Basement War Heroes, What Did You Do in World War II, Grandpa? And it's a story of Bernard Flynn and his adventures, I guess you could say, Brian, in the Merchant Marines. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say that's very fair. And mostly his lifelong mission to bring the Merchant Marines' service during World War II to greater recognition.
Well, let's back up and let our Veterans Radio audience know a little bit about really what the Merchant Marines did, even prior to World War II.
Well, even prior to World War II, what's interesting about the Merchant Marines is that they were the very first organized service, even before the U.S. Navy was established.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since 1772, the Merchant Marine has been supplying our troops in every war since.
Well, my understanding is that as part of that, the Lend-Lease program where we were sending ammunition and so forth to England, is that it was the Merchant Marines that were taking these supplies across the Atlantic Ocean right through the middle of the German submarine attack wolf packs.
Correct.
And can do you have any idea of the damage that was being done to these men that were, you know, fighting in these really not very big ships?
Oh, it's tremendous. When you look at the casualty rate of all the services and all the branches during World War II, the highest casualty rate were merchant mariners. 1 in 26 died during World War II.
Wow. Yeah, again, for our audience, I don't think that they realize how active that the German submarines were in that corridor between the United States and Britain. In fact, they would kind of camp out just outside of the harbors of Boston, New York, and Baltimore, and all the way down around the Florida, and just kind of pick these guys off as they came out, you know, loaded with ammunition and tanks and everything else.
That's a fascinating aspect, is my grandfather grew up in Boston, so he was right by the shipyards, and he would see the wreckage and the devastation caused by those submarines, and yet he still volunteered to go out on those boats.
I don't understand people like that. Really, I don't. It's amazing to me that we were able to do that. And the important thing here is that the Merchant Marines came under the control of the Navy during World War II. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. And your grandfather was one of the very first people to go to the Merchant Marine Academy.
He was in the third graduating class of the Merchant Marines, yes.
And
he luckily, amazingly enough, before he passed away, he was able to attend his 70th anniversary, 70th reunion.
That's covered pretty thoroughly in the book for folks. We're talking with Brian Cronin. The book is entitled Bargain Basement War Heroes, What Did You Do in World War II, Grandpa? And Grandpa did a lot. His story is fascinating. And I get, you know, his motivation in my mind was the Merchant Marines were cut out of all veterans benefits during World War II for being in World War II. Is that correct?
Correct.
How did that come about? I mean, how did they get away with that?
That's one, a fascinating aspect about this, is that even now, 70 years later, it is still unclear exactly why they were cut out. But my grandfather opens up a few different theories. Some of them, one of the ones that he thought was particularly interesting when President Obama took office, is the effect of having African American members of the Merchant Marines.
Mm-hmm.
While the other branches were still segregated, the Merchant Marines was fully integrated. And he theorizes, my grandfather, that perhaps that affected some members of Congress that not to reward these men with veteran benefits.
Well, it's like the fight that we had with women veterans for the longest period of them, you know, receiving their entitlement as well. And it seems like something that we're going to have to do to just keep this in front of our congressmen and congressmen and women, and let them know that this is unacceptable. I mean, these men, as you pointed out, put their lives on the line at a higher rate than anybody in any service during World War II, and that's including the Marines and the Army. And for whatever reason, they've been excluded to all the benefits that all veterans were entitled to at the time. And the book is fascinating to our audience. There's a lot of correspondence. Your grandfather wrote a lot of letters to famous people, politicians, and so forth, and he got a lot of letters back from them. And he found comments from President Roosevelt, Eisenhower, Marshall, Eleanor Roosevelt, all of them urging support for the Merchant Marines. And I can't figure out how this thing, because it was a special amendment or a special law that they must have passed in Congress to exclude them.
Yes, what it was that during the middle of the war, they basically took them out of the purview of veterans. So merchant mariners who died during the war actually went from having death benefits to having none.
Yeah, your grandfather described them as becoming migrant workers.
Yes, pretty much.
It's really disgusting when you think about that they always ask people to do more and more and more and more, and the more that they do, the less and less that they get, it seems like. So tell me where your grandfather was. It sounds like he was pretty much all over the world during World War II.
Pretty much. He was making deliveries up into England, and they also made deliveries to down along the coast of Africa. And I believe, I'm going to double check that, I believe they made at least one delivery into Russia.
Oh, yeah, he mentioned that. That's one of the parts of the book that I did get to read about, the Murmansk, I think it was called, where they would go through the Norwegian fjords in these ships that went, I think it said, 11 knots. I'm not in the Navy, so I don't even have any idea how fast that is. That just sounds really slow. And, you know, again, the German submarines would kind of, it's like a shooting gallery, would try to pick them off as best they could. And that sometimes the Navy would provide, certainly not battleships or destroyers, but Corsairs, I think they are, you know, lightly gunned ships to protect them. But also these Liberty ships, these merchant marine ships, were also armored. I mean, not armored as in protective armor, but with guns, correct?
Yes, my grandfather at one point he still has shrapnel and an unexploded shell from when he was a gunner.
Oh my!
At one point,
I just think it's fascinating what these men did. Well, that's a fight that we can continue to fight, is trying to get the Merchant Marine the benefits that they are entitled to and the recognition that they're entitled to. I think that's what's really important here. Is, you know, even 70 years later, we have to make sure that these people are recognized for the effort that they put forward. I mean, they put their lives on the line, and I just don't understand this neglect that is happening there. Tell me a couple of, if you can, off the top of your head, I'm thinking about how he talks about the idea of that he really wanted to get these stories out to his grandchildren. Why was that so important to him, do you think?
Well, I believe anyone wants to believe that their stories will remain in the family after they're gone. But especially someone with 21 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren by the time he passed away. for years, it would always be, what, you know, Grandpa, we have a project at school. Tell us about World War II. And as he got older, he realized that there's going to be great-grandchildren who are going to have those same questions, and perhaps someone won't be around to tell them that. So instead, here, he has a record of all that for you know, posterity, I suppose you would say.
Well, it is a good story, and I have enjoyed reading it. And he talks about being all over the world, and there's just the idea of growing up during the Depression. This greatest generation is passing away at a very, very rapid rate, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so we want to make sure that we encourage everybody to get, get these stories from their grandpas or the great grandpas if they can. And this is something that we've been promoting on Veterans Radio, and so many other people around the country are trying to nail these stories down. We need to take a quick break, Brian, and we'll be back in just a moment. But we're talking with Brian Cronin. His grandfather's book is entitled Bargain Basement War Heroes, What Did You Do in World War II, Grandpa? And we'll be back in about 15, 20 seconds. You're listening to Veterans Radio. A little bit more Andrew Sisters music, and we're back here on Veterans Radio. We're talking to Brian Cronin. His grandfather wrote a book, and the PR piece that I got along with the story was A Voice for Unrecognized Veterans, True Life Stories About a Mariner in World War II. And the title of the book is Bargain Basement War Heroes, What Did You Do in World War II, Grandpa? And he touches on an awful lot of subjects in this in his book, and it seems like I guess maybe that's what you do as you get older and you realize that you've experienced an awful lot of things in your life, because I know I'm starting to think that way too. But he talked one of the topics in here, and I didn't get to read this, so I don't mean to throw this at you, but he throws in one of the topics of Kennedy's assassination and communism. Can you reflect on where was he going with that?
His area, when it comes to the Kennedy assassination and communism, specifically deals with a classmate of his at Kings Point.
Oh, Abba.
Abba Schwartz.
Okay. Who is Abba?
Part
who
of
is
that,
Abba, who is
yeah.
Abba Schwartz?
Abba Schwartz eventually became a big part of the State Department, especially in the Kennedy administration, and was a close friend of the Roosevelt, Eleanor Roosevelt specifically.
Okay.
Schwartz was a big proponent of more of an open border, especially with immigration. And I suppose you can say that his conspiracy theory, my grandfather, had something to do with Schwartz and why exactly Oswald was let back into the United States.
Oh, okay.
A lot of this, as he even throws in, he makes a point before he says anything, that these are perhaps out there theories.
Right. Well, a lot of his comments, in the book is that he says, this is just the theories, my theories. And they may be true and they may not be, but, this is my opportunity to talk about them.
I'll say at the very least, he brings up some interesting ideas about Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
That Schwartz, a 23-year-old Harvard Law graduate, being in the Merchant Marines was an odd thing for the time.
I would think so. I was going to comment on how many, for all the veterans that are listening today and anybody, if you've been thrown into a barracks type or dormitory type living arrangement, your roommates come from all over the place, and you make some good friends that last a lifetime, and you meet some people that are a little bit unusual. And it sounds as though that this Mr. Schwartz was a little bit unusual to be in the Merchant Marines. I mean, as a Harvard graduate, I don't know if there was any particular... He went to the Merchant Marine Academy with him, didn't he?
Yes. And Schwartz, it appears evident that at the very least Schwartz was doing some sort of secret missions for the government.
Okay, yeah, we'll go that far. You can torture
And you're right, it's that fascinating aspect of you can hide lots of things you can't hide from the people who are in the barracks with you.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And you know, there is no privacy in barracks. And it's just kind of fascinating when you think about all the conditions that your grandfather went through. And I'm just looking here again at the explanation of it. It says in 1940, he graduated from Boston English High School, which is the oldest public high school in the United States. He went to the Merchant Marine Academy. He is a licensed officer. And I don't know exactly how the licensing goes, but he was allowed to take these ships across the ocean as a, you know, as a crewman and so forth. So you have to do that. He went on active duty on a Navy cruiser in 1945. As you mentioned, he's got a lot of he's left a really big legacy out there.
Yes.
21 grandchildren and 10 great
21 grandchildren, now 11. One was born right after he passed, so 11 great-grandchildren.
Oh, my. When did he pass away?
Just earlier this year, in January.
Oh, okay.
Right before the book came out, sadly.
Oh, I bet he would have loved to have been out there talking to people about this, though.
He certainly would, but at least he got to see the galleys.
Oh,
he
okay.
lived long enough to see the galleys, which is great.
That's pretty impressive, though. When you
and as I saw before, the 70th reunion of his graduating class, where he won an Alumni Association Meritorious Service Award.
It's amazing. You really got it, folks. You got to go out and find this book. It's a great story of what, you know, what he did during the war, and it's a sad story when you think about the information that he passed along here. He's got, I'm looking at 1,000 ocean-going merchant marine supply ships were sunk by submarines. Surface raiders just old plane on North Atlantic, typhoons, storms. Some of these ships that were built pretty quickly, and on the assembly line, sort of on a Henry Ford type of an assembly line, and some of them actually broke in half during storms. I cannot imagine wanting to get back on a boat again.
He really captures well the aspect of being on the lookout on a deck, knowing that you are a sitting target, and just going out there, doing your mission, while knowing that you are the reason that the submarines are out there.
Mm-hmm.
The submarines are out there to sink you. Every little wave, anything interesting, that could be a submarine coming for your ship that night.
Well, I think what's interesting, I kind of, I don't know, didn't disprove something, but I had always assumed that all the cities on the East Coast, you know, would blacked out at night. And he said, no, that wasn't the case. And so when they would come out of the harbors, the silhouette of their ships is perfect against the backdrop of Boston, New York, you know, Baltimore, and all these other things. And the Germans are just kind of sitting out there going, well, here comes some more. Let's see what we
Pretty
can
much.
Get. And it said that they, it looks like they knocked out something, it looks like 2,700 of these Liberty ships were built quickly, some in 7 days. If you can imagine a ship being built in 7 days. And the vast majority of them broke apart. And he said, I personally sailed on one that was re-welded together. I don't know about you, but it's a great story. And where can we get a hold of this book?
I think probably the easiest way is just Amazon.com. It has Bargain Basement War Heroes.
I think it's a powerful story, and I certainly encourage everyone to go out and check it out. I mean, and you can get it on Kindle for those of you that are technically savvy.
It's a good deal on Kindle. The ebook is very affordable, I believe.
Yeah, it was only $4.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty reasonable. But you need to get a little bit bigger Kindle or a tablet so you can see the pictures up close and personal. He's got a great collection of photographs from that time period. Great stories. Copies of the letters from Eisenhower and Roosevelt and Truman even, and so on and so forth. So it's a good cause. It's something that we need to continue fighting to make sure that these mariners get the benefits that they are entitled to, or their families, since almost all of them are gone now. And it's just a sad state of affairs when we don't take care of our own. We keep talking about taking care of our veterans, but if you exclude 250,000 men who put their lives on the line every single day, and probably more often than many other people that were in the service, I think it's an opportunity for us to help them out. I would hope so.
Absolutely, anyway. Absolutely, yeah.
What is the favorite story that you have about your grandfather?
From the war stories
or
any
time? It sounds like he just liked. It sounds like a cool guy.
Yes, he's an amazing guy. He was one of those fellows who just, his entire house, he rewired his house, he built extensions all by himself. Probably my favorite story along those lines was one I told about, he's 85 years old, and he has his ladder that he would have to the top of his roof that he's had for, he had his house for the last 50 years of his life or so. He would have this ladder to the roof of his house, and there he is, 85, climbing to the top of his ladder to go do some work on his roof. However, being that he is now 85 years old, he's now shorter and cannot reach the top of the roof.
Oh.
So he then takes a smaller ladder.
Oh, no.
And straps it to the top of his big ladder so that he can get to the roof. Luckily, at that point, he then realized that that was probably going a bridge too far. So he had my older brother come help instead. But that's the kind of guy he was. He would see a problem, and he would come up with a solution, no matter how outlandish or how out there it would be.
It sounds like sort of a Rube Goldberg type of invention, just to make sure that it worked.
That was definitely him. That was him all around. When we, as we got his house after he passed, you would see all through the house, you'd have a drawer where he put a contraption together. He wanted something, he wanted to have somewhere in his back porch. He wanted to have some cool beverages. So he worked out a contraption with styrofoam that he built into his wall to keep beverages cool in the back porch.
That sounds like my grandfather. I think it sounds like a lot of our grandfathers from that era. You know, you didn't have a whole lot, so you just invented it or made it up or whatever you had to do. I think that's
very accurate, I believe, yes.
I think it's a great story, Brian, and I'm sure that he's looking down and is very proud of you for being out here and telling his stories, and see if we can get the word out more and more as we go along. I think it's a great opportunity for us here on Veterans Radio. We have to really get the word out about the plight of all these people in the Merchant Marines. I don't know if the case is the same today. I'm going to have to talk to my partner who was a Merchant Marine and ask him about this, because it just seems unacceptable that this could be the scenario. And this is basically what the story is about, his adventures in the Merchant Marines, but also his fight to get recognition for those that were in the Merchant Marines. And Brian Cronin is a grandson. He's going to carry on the fight, it sounds like. And we'll be more than happy to help you out as you go along. If anything comes up, you know where to find us. And I've got your number now, so if I have any more questions, I will be getting in touch with you. You can find this book on Amazon.com. Again, it's Bargain Basement War Heroes, What Did You Do in World War II, Grandpa? And I encourage you to get out there and read the book, or at least download it so that you can read the stories. They're humorous, they're scary, and they're meaningful. And I think that you can't do much more than that. So, Brian, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio today.
Thanks so much for having me.
It was my pleasure. My pleasure. Okay, folks. Well, we've come to the end of another program. The time does go really quickly. And I do have a couple of things that I wanted to remind you of. Again, is that the events at Schoolcraft College coming up in October. And so you want to check our website or on Facebook. You can find out more information about Veterans Radio on Facebook, on Twitter. You can listen to our podcasts now. Go to our website, veteransradio.net, click on podcasts, and a number of our programs are coming up there in 20-minute segments so that you don't have to listen to the whole program. We're excited to find out more and more about technology as we go along, so we encourage you to do that. And we want to make sure that you listen to Veterans Radio every week. Next week, Bob Gould will be here as the host, and we will be talking about more and more stories as we go along, because this is the whole purpose of Veterans Radio, is to tell your stories. So contact us, Dale@VeteransRadio.net, or Bob, or Jim@VeteransRadio.net, and we'll get that information out and contact you and see what we can do to help you out. So remember, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on the internet, VeteransRadio.net. Until next week, you are dismissed.
Thank you.